Hello and welcome to episode 50 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. My name is Ankita Narayan and my voice has changed over the last few days, you may have noticed. I'm actually Nishant Joshi. I was interviewed in episodes 41 and 42 of this podcast, as you may remember, for those of you who tuned in. Now, to celebrate the 50th Desi Outsiders podcast, it's a landmark. It's the half century of this podcast. These guys have been going for years and years and years. And by that, I think, I mean, about 2 years. And I think that both Ankita and Meenal both deserved a tribute of sorts. And so I thought I'd flip the tables this week. And as the biggest fan of Ankita and Meenal's body of work, particularly episodes 41 and 42, which were quite memorable, especially for me, I thought it would be very fitting if we turned the tables on Ankita and Meenal and I interviewed them. So in this episode, the interviewers will become the interviewees. Wow. Pause for dramatic echo. Okay. So, Ankita, Meenal, welcome to the show. So I'm recording this live from London. Ankita is live in North London. And
not
Meenal
really. I'm not in North London.
You're in Scotland, aren't you?
Yeah, that's not North London. That's
exactly.
The North,
North London. North London. And Meenal's in Eastern Europe, so she's too far away. So
that's probably quite, it's not important.
That's probably quite an extensive delay. Sorry. So I know that the interviewers are quite keen to carry on the chat, but just to be clear, I will be moderating this, and I will be moderating this with an iron fist. Okay. So, Ankita.
Yeah.
How's life? You guys have brought up 50 episodes of Desi Outsiders. You started this podcast 2 years ago.
Wait.
Did you have
No, Nishant, it's pretty clear that you didn't do your research. I mean, one thing about the Desi Outsiders is that we get down to business and we're so good at professional stalking. Our research is never wrong. So this is not much of a tribute to us if you haven't done your research. We just celebrated our one-year anniversary on September 22nd. Is Nishant still there?
Yeah.
Okay. So, guys, you've just celebrated your one-year anniversary, and you've impressively managed to amass 50 podcasts in that time. Ankita, based in Scotland most of the time, and Meenal, based in Czech Republic most of the time. So, did you ever think that you'd reach 50 podcasts, and did you think that you'd reach it so quickly, Ankita?
I actually didn't think we'd reach it so quickly because the initial plan was that we would take a few breaks in between. We would take about a month-long break in between. But surprisingly, we ended up taking just about a week or two between seasons. So yeah, we got to the 50 mark a lot sooner than I expected. But I always did expect that we would reach this landmark. And I in fact expect us to go on to 100 and 200 and 300 someday. And I guess we'll find out where we will be at that point.
I mean, I expected to get to 50, no doubt, but I didn't expect to get to episode 50 in this sort of way. We started off with a very different idea of how we wanted what we wanted to do on our podcast. It started off by us sharing our stories, and then somehow we ended up interviewing some big celebrities, and not just celebrities, but people who are very well known in their respective fields. So I expected to get to 50, but I didn't expect to get to 50 in this sort of way.
Yeah, I expected it to be a podcast about social issues and culture, society, and all of those things that we used to discuss initially, and maybe even our own personal stories. Like, I expected us to share more about our own lives along the way, but I guess with season 3, we completely stopped doing that. No more brain dumps, no more asking Meenal what's happening with her training, nothing of that sort.
And what have some highlights been in the past year? I mean, what's been remarkable about your podcast so far is that not just that you've had such a consistent output whilst being in different countries, but I mean, 50 podcasts between two people in 1 year is quite a magnificent achievement to start off with. But then I think that those of us who have been regular listeners and even guests will note that your interviewing style has changed over the past year. Your characters and as your own lives have developed over the past years as well. It's been quite notable that your interviewing style has changed to reflect that as well. So, I mean, Ankita, in particular, you've been going through quite a few life changes in the past year. What have your views on feminism and particularly, how have they changed in the past year with the advent of this podcast?
So first of all, you mentioned that a lot of changes have been happening and our interview styles have changed. To be honest, I don't know about Meenal, but I personally can't see these changes because I do this on a weekly basis. So for me, it's an ongoing process. So I've not been able to, you know, process the changes that have been taking place in my style of interview. If anything, I feel like our interviews are getting more conversational rather than more rigid. As for the changes in my own personal life, unfortunately, there haven't been many changes in my own personal life because it's just a week-to-week thing now with the podcast and what I write. But as far as feminism is concerned, I think that it's a really crucial time for us as women, as, you know, people living in this world, because so many feminist issues are popping up, so many voices are being heard. So I feel that we need to be a part of the society and actually contribute to those voices. And I believe that in some way or the other, Meenal and I are doing that, be it with Feminism India or with our podcast and the guests we have on our show and what they talk about. Especially the female guests always make it a point to talk about what they have faced in their respective fields to get to where they are today. So the hoops they had to hop through or all the obstacles they face. So I feel that we're able to finally contribute to the voices that are emerging today.
And I think that when we did start off Desi Outsiders, we were more into the idea of, you know, girls have to go through certain things in their family and they have to face certain struggles. But then as we started interviewing more and more people, we started to see sort of feminism through a different prism where there's so many angles to it. I mean, I never thought that, for example, Aditi Gupta from Menstrupedia, is someone like her is needed so much in India. And obviously that does go into the idea of feminism and bringing equality in. But I think speaking to so many different people from so many different fields, you know, we had Anjali Menon, we had Snehal Pradhan, who's also who's a cricketer. We had Aditi Gupta, who's founded Menstrupedia. I think that for me, this was a big eye-opener that feminism is so much more than what we think it is from at home. There's so much more involved in it. And I think that Ankita and I still have a lot more to learn about these things. And I'm pretty excited to keep learning more about feminism because I think that, as Ankita said, that it is a very, very important point in time now where so many things are cropping up. And it's important that people are aware of these things.
Yeah, and especially for people like us me and Meenal, who have completely different backgrounds. I come from India. I live in a first world country now. Everything's different for me. For us to speak to people from different parts of the world about these topics, it really broadens and widens our horizons.
And Meenal, I mean, one thing I really wanted to talk to you guys about more, and one thing that I've been encouraging you guys about, is to espouse the views of feminism, but also to explain feminism through a different prism, as you said, actually. Because I think feminism remains one of those things which is still relatively poorly understood. And I think that particularly as men, it's something that we purport to empathize with. But I also feel that it's one of those things that as men, we essentially have a bit of a vested interest in just being a bit duplicitous about it, really, because as human beings and as half of the population, actually, we are by default granted in most places around the world, I think it's without a doubt, men are afforded a social status or some sort of privilege which outweighs that of women or denigrates that of women. And I think that as men, it's very tempting to take that privilege for granted and just try and maintain the status quo. And so as a society, especially Western society, especially in India, when we're born with that privilege, when we're born into families that sometimes treat the brothers better than they do the sisters, and society and religion and culture over a period of centuries has built up all of this this weight and this there's a weight of centuries worth of history and culture, especially in India and especially in the westernized world. I mean, we do have an interest in maintaining that status quo. And so I feel that a lot of the commentary from men, particularly with regards to feminist issues, has been rather disingenuous. Meenal, how do you feel about that?
No, I think you're right, Nishan. And I think this is why it's important for us as a society and us as women as well to understand that our ideas about feminism and the changes that we want to bring, it isn't going to happen overnight. You're talking about centuries of traditions where men are probably given the upper hand in some cases, where brothers are treated better than sisters. But if we can break that cycle, that generation cycle, through the next, I don't know, maybe decade, then it means that we're slowly bringing a change. And I listened to an interview with Farhan Akhtar, who's a very famous Bollywood actor, and he made a very good point that as children now and as teenagers, we're going to grow up to be parents as well. And it's our responsibility as parents to teach our sons that, you know, women have to be treated with a certain degree of respect and they have to be treated with equality. And I think that Farhan Akhtar made a very good point, because what our parents taught us is going to be very different to what we teach our children. And I think it's our generation which has the potential to break that sort of gap. So I think that the point that you made is a very good point. And it's a very good point because it just puts emphasis on the fact that feminism is something that is going to take a very long time. And it isn't just about showing people that men shouldn't have the upper hand. It's not about showing people that women should have a higher status than men, but it's about treating everybody with equality. And it will take a very long time, I think.
I mean, in the past few weeks, we've been hearing so much about the Harvey Weinstein issue, and it all boils down ultimately to the point that he was driven by the power that he had, because it was not just sexual abuse. He would punch his own brother in the face. He would abuse reporters and journalists. Pictures would be taken of the abuse, but nothing would resurface. It was all about power. And if anyone went against him, he would destroy their careers. And this happens a lot in the world. And a lot of women and even men have come out explaining that this has happened to them in their workplaces as well. More often than not, this happens to women, and men are the ones executing this kind of power. So that in itself is an indication of what is wrong with this world right now. Unfortunately, I'm not saying that women need to start abusing men. I'm just saying that in most of these cases, men are the ones who are abusing their powers.
And now that we're seeing that there are consequences to this sort of behavior, it raises the fact that, you know, this is not acceptable. So before, Nishan, when you mentioned centuries ago and years ago when men were given the upper hand and they were treating women in a certain way, there was no consequence to it. But now with the revolution of feminism and the idea that women are much more outspoken, there is a consequence, and it's important that men are aware of that.
But Meenal, you raised the point about Farhan Akhtar, for example. And of course, all this Weinstein thing has been going on as well. And then a lot of people have come out essentially denouncing Weinstein across the board. And it seems quite easy for people like Farhan Akhtar to send the odd message on Twitter or Facebook and say, yes, women deserve to be treated like this and that. And it's not going to do any harm, I'm saying. But by the same token, somebody like Farhan Akhtar, in one of the most privileged positions, is saying this. How can we make sure that this talk from a person in a very, very privileged position can translate into wider societal and cultural change? And particularly if we look at things from a religious and cultural perspective, and I think India particularly influenced by this, how can we look to adjust or perhaps undo some of the obvious cultural taboos that have been in place? For example, paying dowries in India. For example, female genital mutilation.
I think that the main thing that we need to look at, Nishant, is education. And education doesn't just happen in school. It happens at home as well. And in India, in a society where we pay so much respect to what our parents teach us and what our parents tell us, it's important that we teach kids the right things at home and the right things at school. So now you're talking about, you know, people who may not have such privilege, but most kids do. Well, I hope that in this is the case that in the next decade or so, more kids will have access to education. And I think that the biggest problem we have is that in our society, especially in India, is that there's a problem with the education system in the sense that these kind of topics are not raised in school. And if these topics are not raised in school, it means that people are not comfortable to talk about
and
these things.
Even if these topics are raised in school, these children sometimes go home and see the complete opposite of what they were taught in school, the values that they... I think education really does begin at home, because if they see women being treated with respect, women being treated equally at home, and even if they don't learn about it in school, then they will just imbibe these values and these qualities. It's just that talking about it or reading about it in a textbook and then coming home and seeing your dad abuse your mom, or your mom give a bigger piece of chicken to the boy than the girl, seeing all these things that actually, you know, impacts them emotionally and mentally, and they just make up their minds about these things. And that's why there's not much of a change. I mean, honestly, I come from a society in Kerala where Jayashree Mishra, who's also a writer from Kerala, she was on a show, she mentioned how she left Kerala 30 years ago and she returned recently to find that nothing much had changed. And that is a fact. And I know this because I'm from Kerala myself. Nothing much has changed in the past 30 years in terms of mentalities. And
we can also look at it in a more positive light, in the sense that education now is also coming through social media. And in a place like India, where there are a lot of rural villages, a lot of rural areas, people are gaining more access to the internet. And that's great news for people like Ankita and I, because most of our content is through the internet, right? So if we can, as podcasters, as content creators, if we can reach through to these people, I think we're taking the right step. We're taking the right steps in the right direction.
Exactly, because education right now is, especially in countries like India, the traditional sense of education is not what is going to help our generation. It has to be self-education through social media, through messages put out there, through friends groups, and through, you know, whatever people perceive as cool. That is how education should and is probably taking place. That is how these messages have to be spread.
So. And it's someone like Farhan Akhtar going on the internet. Imagine if someone in rural India comes across his tweets or anything that he says, it might ring a few bells. And I think what Farhan Akhtar did is great, because we need more of that. And you're right that in a privileged family, it's a lot easier to follow these things. But it's important to sow the seeds. And if you just put the idea in someone's head, you've already started to create the sort of effect that you want to create in the next few years.
Do you think that your Desi Outsiders podcast has had an influence on people in the last year?
Well, I feel that the podcast has had an influence on American people more than Indian people, unfortunately. I mean, not unfortunately, I'm always grateful for our American listeners, but our metrics show us that there are more Americans tuning in than Indians. And the problem, we've discussed this multiple times on this podcast, is that a lot of people in India are not really open to the idea of a podcast. They're not open to the idea of listening to something. However, it is quite interesting to note that people are interested in watching YouTube videos, which are not as easily consumable. I mean, you can listen to a podcast while you're commuting to work, but people don't get that. I don't know if it's access to the internet that is standing as a barrier, because everyone's scared to use up their data. There's not a lot of free Wi-Fi available in India. So I don't know if that's the problem, but as far as influence, I think we have elicited a little bit of a few reactions from people who've been angry with us for the kind of messages we're putting out there. And I think
what sort of people have been angry at you? Have they been uniformly men, or have they been women?
It has been men more mostly, because one thing that does pop up that does come to mind is with one of our initial episodes where we spoke about, Meenal shared the story of this family in Europe where everyone's educated. This little sister has a boyfriend and her brother abuses her physically for the fact that she has a boyfriend. I mean, it's quite backward in that family. The mentality is quite backward. And this boy, this other man, just sends us a message saying, how could you be so cruel to the brother in your podcast? Because Ankita actually called him an asshole. Because why don't you look at this whole scenario from his point of view? What if this brother had a girlfriend and the family didn't accept it, and he was frustrated with that, and that's the reason why he took it out on his sister? We saw this and we did respond to him, because we did explain to him that this is the reason why these problems exist. People like you are, you know, perpetrators if you support this kind of behavior. But at the end of the day, Meenal and I discussed how we managed to create this sort of a reaction. We managed to elicit this reaction from this man. We made him think enough for him to sit down and type an email and tell us that we were wrong. Tell us that I was wrong for using the word asshole.
I think it's very easy for us to, I mean, all these sort of negative emails and comments that we get, these ones are the ones that usually...
I'm sorry, they're mostly from me, aren't they? I've run out of pseudonyms now.
These are the ones which are usually etched in our memory most of the time. But I think that I'm quite sure we do have a good influence on a lot of people as well. But maybe people don't take the time to tell us personally. But I have a lot of friends who tell me that, you know, that they didn't know this specific side of the story from this specific celebrity or from this specific person. And not just influencing people in India and America, Nishant, but I think that people in maybe Czech Republic, I have a few friends here, friends in Gibraltar, in the UK, they are very interested to see what our society is like and what the Indian culture is like. And for them,
yeah,
it's become a sort of educational tool as well. So it isn't just about influencing people to become feminists or to bring equality. It's also just a tool for a medium for education to show that, you know, people live their lives like this as well. And this is how people have to deal with things in our society.
Yeah, to share these stories as well, because a lot of people, especially in countries like India, we have a lot of hero worshipping going on. You look at a celebrity and you think, for example, I don't know, Nishant, if you noticed, but a lot of Indian news tabloids have been flooded with Diwali, insider Diwali pics of celebrities. Because who cares? We don't care, but a lot of Indians do. And everyone just worships their celebrities. And we think that if we can get through to these celebrities and we can interview them, we can bring out this human side to them and share stories that are relevant, that they didn't just become these celebrities overnight, that they had a journey, they had to work hard to get to where they are, and a lot of factors, maybe even privilege, has helped them along the way. These are things that people need to relate to. These are things that people need to hear more so that they can humanize these people that they worship. So that's an important component of what we do. We really love sharing these stories. Not only do we learn from them, but we've heard from our audience how they've also finally understood certain aspects of someone else's journey that they were never aware of.
And we talk about the element of hero worshipping in India. And in what way do you feel this has a negative effect on... Do you feel that this actually has a negative effect on the message that you're trying to put out to people?
I think the concept of hero worshipping does have a negative effect in general, because if a celebrity does something wrong, for example, let's just take your alt cricket Twitter account, for example.
I'm not sure I'd refer to myself as a celebrity.
Hero, no, you're not the celebrity here.
Okay.
Virat Kohli is the celebrity.
Hero, fair enough. Okay. I'll leave it at that. Please.
Virat Kohli is the hero here.
You're describing me as either a hero or a celebrity. Yes, difficult decision, but yeah.
I can't even remember
you're talking about me being a hero / celebrity.
Anyway,
I was just trying to emphasize that you shouldn't refer to me as a celebrity.
So this dude who maintained the alt cricket Twitter handle, he said something about Virat Kohli, and Virat Kohli fans just went crazy. They went bonkers and they reported this guy. I mean, I can't remember his name. And he lost.
He's not a celebrity or anything.
He was not that important. He's just like, he was just, I don't know, alt cricket or something. Like he lost his Twitter handle, and it's completely unreasonable. I mean, we spoke to Karan Talwar about this issue the other day, and Karan was like, you know, something had to be done about it. It's just so silly, so crazy that this happened, that a bunch of Virat Kohli fans just went and reported this person for making a joke about Virat Kohli, and that Twitter account, which was quite funny, to be honest.
Quite influential.
Is no more. It's not there anymore. It's a clear indication of what happens when there's a lot of blind hero worshipping going on, because people can't, first of all, it's not about even taking a joke. It's about being open to criticism.
And I think all this hero worshipping results in a lot of irrational behavior, and irrational behavior in the sense that they think that they are there to sort of protect these heroes. And I'm pretty sure Virat Kohli isn't even aware of all these fan accounts that he has anyway. But a good example is that Ankita and I, a couple of months ago, we posted something on Feminism India, I think, and one of Salman Khan's fans sent us a rape threat. And you just think that what someone can't even be proud of that. So hero worshipping is fine. I mean, you can have someone who you idolize and you look to as a role model, but having this sort of irrational behavior is not acceptable. And this irrational behavior, unfortunately, has become very normal in India to the extent that it's actually just accepted now.
It stems from the feeling that this person that I'm worshipping is completely different from me. This person does not eat, poop, or sleep. This person is God. So that's the kind of feeling they have, and that's the kind of reverence they show. And what we want to do, if we do get Salman Khan on the show at some point, I mean, I'm just putting it out there. If we do get, I would like to share a story of Salman Khan that would totally humanize him and not make him look like a god. I don't know if he'd be happy with that, but that's what I would aim to do.
And I think this is where we're really getting to the nub of these essentially psychological issues which have a wider cultural, there is essentially symptoms which are manifested as wider cultural just phenomena, really. And the whole art of hero worshipping, and the question is, why does it happen more in India than in other countries? Well, for example, if we compare India just to broadly the Western world, in air quotes, not saying that the Western world has all the answers to everything, but clearly, there is an element in India, quite a large element, as I think the Virat Kohli Twitter issue was a very good example of it. Why is India so much more prone to hero worshipping? And then, as you say, Ankita and Meenal, you both mentioned the aspect of humanizing, and I would counter that with what we're really getting to the point now is dehumanizing people. And this is what I mentioned earlier on about men and why we start off in a privileged position in life. When we're born as men, we have to understand that we're already a few steps ahead of females. And as harsh as that may sound, it's realistic. This is exactly what has happened in life. And as men, we don't really appreciate that level of privilege and the extent of that privilege. Just if you're born a certain color in a certain country, you are automatically more privileged than a large section of the population. So I would counter your comments about humanizing the celebrities. And I would say that on the opposite end of the spectrum, what that happens is that when you hero worship somebody, you actually put them above humans. That's what you're doing. You're saying this person is not human. I'm going to treat them with parameters, and I'm going to treat them with standards that I would not treat other humans. And on the flip side, there's the counter, which means that women, especially from men, are dehumanized. And this is what we see when, for example, immigrants are talked about, perceived to be, we talk about negative perceptions of immigrants in certain countries. In almost all countries, there's that element. And it's an ongoing dehumanization of immigrants, of women, of all fringe elements of society, all threatening elements of society. And so, Ankita, I was just wondering, why does India have this hero worship, and why is it so prone to over-humanizing certain aspects and dehumanizing fringe elements, including women?
So I'm not sure if a lot of people are going to like this answer, but the fact of the matter is that India is just catching up. I mean, we are right now doing what maybe the West was doing 10 years ago or 20 years ago. The other day, my friends and I, one of them was white, we were watching Koi Mil Gaya, which was released in the year 2001. And we were watching this movie, and suddenly my white friend just said, oh my God, Indian movies in 2001 were basically Western movies in the 80s. And I mean, Star Wars came out in the 80s, and it's still better than Koi Mil Gaya, technology-wise, plot-wise, storyline-wise. So many things come into the equation here. And that's when it rung a bell, because a lot of things, we're just catching up with them. We're just catching up with fast internet. We're just catching up with social media and other platforms. We're getting there. So a lot of things that the West already did, that is by not hero worshipping their celebrities. I mean, it does still happen with the Kardashians or what and whatnot, but it's more toned down than it is in India. I mean, the Kardashian fans are not going to send rape threats to anyone who speaks against them, whereas Salman Khan fans would probably just show up at your door. So we are catching up.
I think, Nishan, you made a good point at why does India hero worship? And I think it's important for us to sort of take a step back and look at where we started centuries ago. First of all, it started off by us worshipping actual gods and demigods. Then, as women, we were told that we should treat our husbands as God as well. And even in my family to this day, women in my family, they touch the feet of their husbands. Even things like Karva Chauth and all these things, because we see our husband as a superior being to us. And it sort of filters down. So it started off from God, then it came down to humans, from wife and husband, even children to parents, and it filters down. And then it was translated into members of the society towards their heroes. So it's the exact same thing, but just through a different realm. And I think that if we are looking at how we can stop this hero worshipping, again, it goes back to what I said earlier about education. Why do people hero worship? They hero worship because they feel that these celebrities have a very different life. They feel they have superpowers. And this is what Ankita and I always stress, that ultimately, at the end of the day, these people are normal. They wake up in the morning, they shower, they eat food, they clean their dishes, just like we do. But people are not aware of that because they think their heroes have slaves around them, they have servants around them, they're always clean. You know, nothing can ever harm them. So it all goes back to education. And it's a big problem because in India, the media sensationalizes these celebrities and, oh, the celebrity did this, the celebrity did that. But we don't really know what they do behind the scenes. And I think that's what creates a very big gap between the actual reality and what people perceive.
But, I mean, you mentioned the media, but women in India have empirically been treated poorly for centuries and centuries, even before there was a mass media. So don't you think there are some wider cultural elements which come into play here?
Exactly. As Meenal just mentioned, so many cultural elements about how it was the man's job to go out and earn bread. It was a woman's job to raise the children at home. And the man, because he's providing for his family, is like a demigod. He's also a hero. You worship him. You touch his feet. You feed him. You clean up after him. It's been going on for years and years. I mean, here's an example. This is something I've mentioned before on the podcast and I've written about it as well. The other day, I wrote about how my husband and I were cleaning the bathroom together, and he was scrubbing the toilet, and my mom calls me and says, "Why are you making Shane scrub the toilet?" And I said, "Doesn't he use it?" And she just couldn't get it. She couldn't get it because she thought, "Oh my God, my poor son-in-law has to scrub the toilet." And that is where it all begins. This is my generation. This is my mom telling me.
And women are treated, you know, differently to men, even in the media. Celebrities maybe not so much, but I think that in the media, if you look at how a journalist interviews a man and how a journalist interviews a woman, you see very big differences. For example, if you see a journalist speak to a man, I'm not generalizing here. I'm saying this is just a theme that I've noticed for the last year or so. If a journalist is interviewing a male celebrity, he will ask him things like, you know, what are your future goals? What are you aspiring to be? What do you want to achieve? Then he will turn around and he will speak to a female celebrity and he will say things like, you know, when do you plan to become mother? When do you plan to get married?
What's your skincare routine?
Yeah.
What's your diet like?
Women are subjected to this kind of life where we're only expected to get married and give birth to babies. And it still happens, even on a larger scale. We still expect the same when we speak to celebrities. But I think that the media needs to sort of change the style of questions that they ask women more specifically. And I think this is why, you know, when Ankita and I have spoken to people like Anjali Menon, Snehal Pradhan, Jayashree Mishra, it wasn't about, oh, what do you plan to have a family in the future? We didn't care about that. We wanted to know more about their career and their drive and their aspirations, because I feel like especially women in Bollywood or in India are not given the chance to express this. And especially, and even more so if women come from families where their parents are celebrities or their grandparents are celebrities, people think they don't have aspirations or they don't have a desire to make a change. But they actually do. The problem is that the right questions are not asked.
And what sort of questions should be being asked?
Well, as I said, I mean, it's okay to ask a woman, like, when do you plan to get married? And you can ask a man as well. You know, there's no problem with that. But we shouldn't be subjected to just that sort of thing, you know, that What is your diet like? What is your skin, as Ankita said, what is your skincare routine? Why don't we ask women things about, you know, if people are aware that these females are trying to actually bring a change, why not ask them about these things? When we talk about Priyanka Chopra, we only think about her Botox injections and the fact that she's gone to the US. But no one really says that, wow, she went to the US, she did an amazing thing, and she's making a career and she's making a name for herself. And I think that these are the kind of questions we need to be asking. And I think that if we go back to 10 years ago, there was one lady, Simi Garhwal, she had a show called Rendezvous with Simi Garhwal. And I think to date, it's the best TV show that India has ever created in terms of
talk show.
Because she asked the right questions to the right people. And she never spoke to someone as if they were a female or they were a male. She spoke to them as if they were human. She didn't look at someone because they had breasts or because they didn't have breasts. You know, it was, this is a woman, this is a man. It doesn't matter. Ultimately, we're all humans.
Okay. And I mean, for you, where do you see feminism moving towards in India in the next few years? And how do you think that it's changed over the past few years? Do you feel that it's heading in a certain sort of direction?
I'm not sure if it's heading in the right direction, because right now a lot of young men and women sometimes are not very comfortable with associating themselves to the term feminism. Somehow it's become a dirty word. They accept everything that feminism stands for. They agree with it, but they just do not like the term. They do not want to be associated with it. So they'll say that, oh, I'm all up for equality. I'm a humanist. I want all human beings to be equal. But at the end of the day, they don't realize that that's basically what feminism says. Treat us equally. Treat everyone equally. We're not saying that a little boy should be punished more than a little girl for the same offense. Right, because that happens as well in my school that I went to. I've seen it. If I didn't bring a textbook to class and a boy in my class didn't bring the same textbook, he would be asked to leave the class and I would be given, say, an imposition. So that is not a feminist classroom environment either. So that is one problem with feminism in India right now. We have a male writer for Feminism India who openly says that he's a feminist, and he gets trolled mercilessly on social media by his friends and classmates who say that, oh, you're a feminist, you're saying this just so that, you know, you can get a new girlfriend or just so that the girls find you hot. And the poor guy, he's just 19 years old. And he's saying people have a problem with the term. They don't have a problem with what it stands for. So my hope is that in the next decade or so, people will embrace the term and not feel ashamed of it and understand truly what it stands for.
And just to go back a little bit, what does feminism mean to you? And how has it impacted your lives? Can you see it on a micro level on a daily basis?
Feminism to me means equality for both men and women. And I see it when I look at my everyday life, I see that women, one thing that really bugs me, Nishant, is that I see that women always say that, you know, we're feminists, we should stand up for equal rights. But then at the same time, and I'm not proud to say this, but I see a lot of girls, you know, walking with their boyfriend saying, oh, like, can you do this for me? Can you do that for me? Can you lift this up for me? And then you just think, like, but you expect the man to do everything for you. But you are, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you fight for equality, but at the same time, you're asking someone else to do your sort of dirty work or your job for you. And that's something that really bothers me. So I feel like there's a lot of people who say they're feminists, but when you really meticulously look at their day-to-day life and their day-to-day activities, you sort of question, like, are you really a feminist? So I think that it's a difficult thing to say, but I think that even women give feminism a bad name. It's something that I see every day, and it feels quite disgusting to see, actually. Like, you can't be saying, I'm a feminist, and then when you turn your back around, you're doing the complete opposite. And I see that a lot, and I see that every day. I'm not generalizing again, but this is something that I've noted.
Yeah, but then at the same time, I think what we really need to appreciate at the end of the day is, remember what you said to Jayashree Mishra, you know, that the good thing about being a feminist is that you can applaud the feminist men in your life. So asking for help, I feel, is not so much of a problem as long as, you know, you're with a person who appreciates.
Yeah, but if you do ask the men in your life to pretty much carry all the weight for you for the rest of your life or to do a lot of work. And the thing is, Ankita, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing to do, but I'm saying that to do it without appreciating it, without appreciating the men in your life. So it's okay to ask your husband or your boyfriend to do things for you, but you don't ask them to do it just because...
No, what you just described about carrying the entire weight for you, I feel that doing that would be failing at a human level. I mean, if you can't function as a human being and you need another human being to do things for you at every turn, then that is failing at a very basic human level. But, you know, coming back, there are so many men who are also emotionally and psychologically and even financially dependent on their female counterparts and their male counterparts. So I feel that that is just failing at a human level, because there are so many men who are super smart, but they would rather not go out and work, but they would rather just sit at home and, you know, I don't know, play video games maybe. And I've read so many cases where there were men who were super smart, but they just refused to go out and get a job because they had their wives supporting them and all they wanted to do was play video games. That is failing at a very basic human level, because you can't take care of
yourself. I only mention what I've seen. I haven't seen what you've described. So maybe, I'm sure it does happen, but I haven't seen that before because I live in Russia. So I live in a very small town, so I haven't seen that side. And I'm just saying what I've seen from my point of view. But you're right, Ankita, I do agree that it does work. It does work vice versa as well.
And I think feminism in daily life that we can see is when there's equal responsibility shared between partners, partners or even friends or people just living together. If suppose there's a roommate arrangement and there's a girl and two boys living together in a flat, there arises a situation where the boys just assume that the girl, because she's a girl, will clean up after them. That is just horrible. But if everyone just takes responsibility for the cleaning up, for the cooking, for the financial side of things, then that would be a very feminist environment to live in.
It's not just the financial and physical tasks and burdens that should be distributed. I think it's also the emotional aspect of it as well. I mean, maybe it also happens that men cry on women's shoulders for their whole lives. I don't know. But I've seen a lot of girls cry on a man's shoulder because they just expect that the man will sort of, you know, just be there for them. But that sort of defeats the whole purpose of feminism, you know? So you're right. I think it does happen on both ends. So I think I'll stop talking there.
I think what we do need to be careful of is generalizing and stereotyping as well. Because although we can, of course, draw upon our own experiences, no single human being is going to be representative of an entire gender of billions and billions of people. And no matter how many hundreds of experiences we've seen, we still can't generalize or stereotype saying this gender behaves in this way across the whole world. And I think it all boils down to, and what we've been talking about over the last bit in this interview is talking about understanding. That's what it boils down to, actually. When we talk about humanizing, dehumanizing people and how to change behaviors, it's all about how we learn to understand one another as human beings. And once again,
also at the end of the day, neither Meenal nor I would ever pretend as if we're experts in this field. I mean, we're just learning along the way. But what are we, 25, 26 year olds? We're simply learning along the way, and we're also new to all this. So I'm sure that maybe in the next 10 years, we would have more authority over this subject. Right now, we're just speaking about things that we understand at a basic level. There are so many, 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 many factors to consider here. So many things to address. And we're not even touching the tip of the iceberg.
It is difficult because, Nishan, you know that you can say something and it can be just blown completely out of proportion and say that, you know, you were wrong and this is not how all men are and this is not how all women are. But I think it's really important that when women or men put their opinions out, it is just an opinion.
And I mean, again, just going back a bit to what I was saying about understanding, I think just it would be quite useful again to just emphasize that I was born into a position of relative privilege, being born as just being born as a man. It puts you ahead in life to some extent, and especially being born as the first child in a family as a man, you're afforded a privilege that your female equivalents aren't always afforded as well. And if you look at the daily struggles that women have to go through, even arguments about, for example, pay rises and going into your boss's office to negotiate a pay rise and these sorts of issues and career issues, we see so many discussion threads going on about how difficult it is for females to advance their careers and balance their family life as well. That equivalent conversation, that the weight of that conversation, the weight of the so-called ticking biological clock, men are never ever faced with that sort of thing. And it's something that's very easy for us to kind of just brush under our emotional carpet and just say, oh, well, glad it's not me. And I think that's the sort of thing that men really, really need to empathize with. And especially in the last year or so, listening to your podcasts, I've listened to every single minute. They've been truly fantastic, especially episodes 41 and 42. Couldn't stop listening to that. And knowing you guys for the last couple of years, and Meenal for longer, obviously, I think the message that has come home is that as men, we really need to be better at empathizing. And I think no matter how well, and no matter how eloquent you guys are, and no matter how good spokeswomen
we prefer spokeswomen,
no matter how good you guys are being at being spokeswomen for feminism and for females all around the world, and I think you guys are fantastic role models in the way that you behave, and the way that you carry yourselves, and just doing this podcast as well. I think that as men, there needs to be a sea change, a cultural sea change in the way that men see women. And we're seeing small ripples of this happening. I think, I mean, we're talking about Harvey Weinstein and Trump being extreme examples. But then again, for example, Trump, when he said that horrible thing, which was caught on tape, saying, for example, he likes to grab women by the pussy and he thinks that he can just kiss them whenever he wants and that sort of thing. And this man was elected president. And you know that if Hillary Clinton did the same thing, or whatever the female equivalent is, she would have been ridiculed and lambasted even more than she already was. And I think the Clinton-Trump example in particular is a fantastic study, a case study, in how we treat men and women to different standards.
I think that when it comes to men having more empathy and understanding what women have to go through, I think men have to be advocates for that. I think it's okay for people like Ankita and I, women, to spread that message out. But I do think that men need to stand up as well. And I'm not saying that they don't, because one of my favorite actors from Jane the Virgin, Justin Baldoni, he's a very strong activist as well. And he's always talking about how men, I mean, his wife is currently pregnant and she's about to give birth. And he talks about these things that he didn't know that his wife was going through. And he makes it a very good point to make people aware that as men, there are certain things that you don't understand what women go through. And with the same token, there are certain things as women that we don't understand men have to go through. So I think that the fact that, you know, the point that you made about men having more understanding and empathy is very true. But I think it should also come from a man's point of view rather than just women talking all the time and speaking about what we believe in.
So how are we going to get this message to be translated from man to fellow man? Because I think women now, we're seeing a lot of people all over the world, this ladies such as yourself, and I think even through, for example, TV shows, like, I mean, I hate to use the example of Girls and Lena Dunham, but for example, somebody like her has brought a lot of feminist issues to the forefront. And there have been a lot of people following in her footsteps and sort of replicating that all over the world. But from a male point of view, there are precious few men who are talking about these issues about women. I mean, there are plenty of people supporting it, but there are a relatively few people who are, I mean, I don't know any men who are hosting a feminism podcast.
No, but I think that men do stand up a lot, Nishant, but I just think it goes unnoticed. For example, I watch The Daily Show, or I watch Late Night with Colbert. A lot of times they stand up for women and they say, you know, that we should be doing this for women. But has anybody ever spoken about it? Has anybody ever created an article saying, you know, Trevor Noah from The Daily Show spoke up for women, or Stephen Colbert said this about women? It's just
actually,
going
they
on.
Have. They do. It does get noticed a lot when men do it. But, you know, to answer Nishant's question, I feel that sometimes things just hit home when you see it with your own eyes. And a lot of times men just think, okay, it's not affecting me directly, so I'm just not going to talk about it. But when they do, it does make the news. Especially Trevor Noah, I feel, always comes up in the news.
But we don't usually associate feminism with men standing up for women. That's, you know, we always say that women...
Thankfully, in the West, it is starting to change.
Yeah, now it's starting to change. Now it definitely is starting to change. But what I was trying to say is that we see feminism as women standing up for women a lot more than we see men standing... You're right, there are articles and people talking about Trevor Noah, but...
I think, at least from an Indian perspective, this would happen a lot more if people did not think that feminism was the other F word.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If people were more comfortable associating themselves with the term and with the ideas and actually speaking about these things. Because, well, nobody from our father's generations, I won't say nobody, but not a lot of people from our parents' generations would come up and say things. A lot more people from our generations are speaking up. So maybe in the future... this will get resolved. But it's all a process. We all have to just wait and see what happens.
Okay, and so, Ankita, Meenal, what do you think is going to be next for Desi Outsiders?
That's actually funny, because if you had asked us this question last year this time, and if Meenal had... I was just telling her, if Meenal told me, Ankita, I just had a peek into the future, and we're going to be interviewing this celebrity or that celebrity, I would have... totally crap my pants, because last year this time I was not the kind of person who was comfortable talking to people in general, let alone celebrities. So
yeah, I've met Ankita in person and she is quite awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I accept that. That's just who I am, guys. But if you'd asked us last year this time, we wouldn't have had any idea that this is where we would be. So with Desi Outsiders, what we've noticed is that it changes week to week, month to month, and we really don't have any clue what's going to happen. But I'm sure that we'd be enjoying what we do even next year.
I think that we have milestones that we want to achieve, you know, that we like, you know, if we speak to this person, that would be amazing. But then once you achieve that milestone, you want to achieve more and more. So I think saying that we have an end goal is a bit of a lie, really, because we don't. We just want to keep going and going and see how much we can actually push ourselves to spread the message that we want to spread.
I mean, at the end of the day, the only thing we can be certain of is that we would be doing this only if we're having fun doing it and we're totally happy with what we're putting out there. So, yeah, if you find us doing Desi Outsiders next year this time, that means that we're still having a lot of fun. So,
as a man, sometimes I have sort of... minor, or what I could describe as micro-ethical, micro-moral decisions to make. And I would like to raise the question of James Corden's jokes. He was presenting an award at an award ceremony. I think he was the host of the award ceremony in America a few days ago. And he made some jokes about Harvey Weinstein. Mm-hmm. And they were the sorts of jokes... He then received widespread condemnation for it. And I'm no fan of James Corden, but this is one area which I really wanted to discuss with you guys as well, because I'm not sure if there's a right answer to it, and I'm sure that I've erred on the wrong side of poor taste in my own jokes and my own tweets. I mean, I think I've probably tweeted over 50,000 times in last 6 years, which is why my life is such a mess now. But I mean, I know that I tweeted some relatively off-color jokes. And if you go to the pub anytime or you're with a group of guys like playing cricket or whatever, I mean, even Meenal came on our cricket tour a few weeks ago to Prague. I mean, there are often quite a few off-color jokes. And just how we view racism right now. And I think, Meenal, when we were on that tour, we were talking about a couple of people who were so racist that they were actually kicked out of cricket teams. And so this is a circle where racism is clearly unacceptable and condemned and openly condemned. And people aren't shy or embarrassed about saying, this man is racist. This man said something which was a little bit off color, made me feel uncomfortable. He can't be with us. He can't be part of our group. But compare that to, for example, sexism, misogyny, I mean, you listen, I mean, I work in a hospital, and every single day I hear plenty. I lose count of the number of sexist comments, the name of misogynist comments, after patients who come in, for example, and nurses as well. Patients will come in, they'll almost be stereotyped into saying, okay, well, this is a female symptom. She's come in with a headache. We can't get to the bottom of it. Just man up. And all of these sorts of things that then come into play. And for example, last night, I was really thinking about it because I went to a comedy gig last night in Covent Garden, and the opening act, he spent a lot of time talking about jokes which were, I couldn't say they were in favor of women, and I couldn't say they were sort of denigrating women as a gender either, but he certainly wasn't showing an awful lot of respect to them either. And to be honest, I found his jokes quite funny, and I didn't know that as somebody who's trying to educate myself on feminism, somebody who's trying to help your podcast grow as well, somebody who's trying to help your message grow and send to other people, am I allowed to laugh at those sorts of jokes?
So it's all about people's personal perception and people's personal lines or boundaries when it comes to these jokes. Like, we had Karan Talwar the other day on our show, and he said that, we asked him, where do you draw the line when you make a joke about a celebrity or someone? And he said these lines, they're pretty invisible because it varies from person to person. For example, Nishanth, you use the word denigrate over here. There would be a listener probably out there who'd think that the word denigrate, which literally means reducing yourself to the level of a Negro. And I'm not using the word in a non-PC way. I'm just explaining the literal meaning of the word and how it came about. There are other people who would think that, even in jest when you said, Ankita, a man is talking, someone would just not get it. Someone would be like, oh, he asked that woman to shut up. So it's a personal thing. The line has to be drawn at a personal level.
But we never ask the question, like, is it okay for a female comic to make fun of a man? But we always ask the question, is it okay for a male comic to make fun of females? And this is, again, what I was saying earlier about people claiming that they're feminists, but then when it comes to these sort of things, they're nor here or there. And when it comes to a man making a joke about a woman, it's absolutely fine to laugh. Of course, if you find something funny, you can laugh. It also depends on, you know, like, there are a lot of factors involved. Like, if someone said something to me in a rude manner with a bad intention, then obviously I would get offended. But if it's a comedy show and it's a joke, that is absolutely fine. I mean, Amy Schumer makes so many jokes about her exes. Has anybody ever said anything about her?
I think where the line should be drawn is in terms of who is listening to you. What kind of a person is listening to this joke? Is it an impressionable human being? Is it a little boy? Is it a little girl? You need to really keep that in mind when you're saying these things, because these lines and these boundaries vary from person to person, but with impressionable people, you probably just need to be PC.
Yeah, definitely. You can't say stuff like that to a growing teenager, male teenager.
Or in the presence of a teenager, you should be careful of those things. But when you're saying it in a cricket team, I guess as long as nobody in the cricket team is offended by it, I guess, I don't know.
As long as you don't make anybody cry, like.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good note to wrap up on. And I'd just like to say thanks and well done to Ankita and Mina. I think the work that you've done over the past couple of years with Feminism India and the past year with Desi Outsiders, reaching 50 episodes so quickly, and all particularly high quality episodes. I mean, if you haven't listened to much of Desi Outsiders, then they really do have a fantastic library of podcast episodes already after just 1 year. And both Ankita and Mina work tremendously hard. And I think it's fair to say that both of you are at the vanguard of feminism. I think that Desi Outsiders has a very, very bright future. And I'm really proud of all the work that you're doing. And thank you for educating me. Thank you for educating everybody else who's been listening to this podcast, because I know you've changed my views over the past couple of years. And I really sincerely hope that you'll be at the forefront of change for the betterment of women, not just across India, but across the whole world as well. I really have a lot of faith in you guys, and I believe in what you're doing.
Thank you, Nishanth. That was really sweet.
Thank you for having us on the show today, Nishanth. We look forward to your future episodes with Desi Outsiders.
and welcome to the Desi Outsiders podcast.
Shut the fuck up. This is my show.
And that's the end of my question, and thank you very much. And I'd like to thank Jesus.
My parents.